This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, good afternoon, my friend.
Well, it would be a good afternoon. It was 75 degrees with a clear sky and a slight breeze. How's that?
Well, it's hazy and 92. I don't
know. Oh, yeah. I love that haze. It really makes me happy.
Oh, reminds me of summers gone by when I was younger.
Well, I would hope so. I'd like to see this summer go by quick. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of everything. Mm-hmm. All the heat. Anything above 85 degrees should be against the law.
Oh, yeah? Send that to our president.
I did.
You did?
Yeah, he ignored it.
Bobby forgot about it.
Yeah, that's true. He lost it. Anyway, thank you for listening to the Lawn and Garden Show. I'm Mike Winters, and want to say that you can call this show if you have any kind of question, regardless of what I'm speaking about. You can interrupt me and say, hey, my lawn's brown. What do I do? Or all my flowers are blooming way too much. What do I do? At any rate, 673-4464 is the number to call. And this show is basically about ideas for your yard, suggestions to correct any malfunctions you might have going on with your landscape, those kinds of things. And hopefully it's it'll help some, and some will say, well, I already knew that, but that's okay.
That's all right.
That's all right. I'm glad you know that. Maybe
just listen. Reminding the folks that didn't.
Yeah, yeah. You never know when you got a new caller on there going, wow, man, I want to listen to this dude.
There you go, baby.
But at any rate, we can talk about Japanese gardens and things like that along those lines today.
And cool.
And if you ever thought about like a small, simple, exotic landscape in the corner of your backyard where you got maybe a little bit of shade and you got some privacy, you know, a garden that's like very unique and very low maintenance that you don't have to work out there six hours a week or anything like that, you know, something that's with small rocks and large boulders and has very little maintenance.
That's what I was thinking. Don't Japanese have a smaller garden because they don't have a whole lot of space?
Some of them are just a big container, you know, and that's good enough.
Yes.
But, usually a Japanese garden is, depends on the size of your yard or what you got to work with, but it isn't very large. It can be, 10 by 15 or maybe 20 by 20 would be a large one, I would say. But, you know, not unreasonable.
Right.
I mean, you could take care of it. Depends on how you design it. Depends on what you have in it, plant-wise, boulder-wise, or if you have a water feature in the middle of it. There's all those kinds of things go with a Japanese garden. But the key thing is simplicity.
Yes.
A lot of space and... Yep. And specimen plants that make a statement that none of your neighbors even know about, I mean, or even have in their yard because you specifically look for unusual, contorted kind of little things that nobody would actually buy because what's wrong with that tree? It's crooked. Well, good. That's a good one for a Japanese garden, boy. I tell you. But... like the rocks, the larger boulders, those kinds of things, that's all part of the motif of a Japanese garden. And then you throw in a few hardy conifers, like a pine or a cedar that require little or no care once they're established. And I'm not talking about something that's going to grow 40, 50 feet tall. I'm talking about something that's it's a dwarf, actually.
Oh.
Maybe, there's many pines, like dwarf mugo pine, and then there's a dwarf weeping pine that they don't get very large at all. Maybe, 3 feet. Long term, mugos will get higher, but you can prune them and sculpt them and prune them so
keep
that
them down to size.
Oh yeah, you can keep them a foot tall forever, and they would fit really well in a Japanese garden.
Hmm.
But if you do those kinds of things, there's little or no care once it's established, and then you win. Little or no care. I like that. All I got to do is sit out here and look at it.
Yeah, enjoy it.
Enjoy it, and that's what you have to do to start thinking about a Japanese garden. It's just very simple, very easy, and very different. I mean, you could have 10 people in your neighborhood building one and using, and not copying one another's, but you would see 10 different designs easily, different plants, different features of it. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're familiar with Japanese gardens at all, you're a step ahead. I mean, if you've been around and seen some of these, like there are some on the coast over there, what do I want to say, Charleston area.
Oh, okay.
Out there, and there's a park out there, a state park, and it has a very large, it's very well landscaped, Shore Acres, I believe, and it is just one area. There's a big pond, and they've got these gigantic boulders half the size of a car or truck, you know, sitting there with a lot of smaller plants and these these twisted, contorted trees that are, you know, look like they're 1,000 years old.
Like,
you know,
they got arthritis.
Yeah, but they don't. They're growing like gangbusters. And, you know, you just, you can have, like I say, boulders, waters, a flagstone path going to nowhere or just kind of meandering through, and just a few unique plants. A few things to consider would be included, like any dwarf conifer. A conifer is an evergreen, if you will, and it's usually a needle tree, like a fir, pine, cedar, you know, those kinds of things, spruce. And there are plenty of dwarf varieties of these. You have to shop around and take a look and see what's available in the area. But dwarf conifers really really make the statement that you want to, because they look like they're, you know, 100 years old, but they only might be 20 years old or 15 years old or something like that. And and that's what the Japanese have done, is
kind of like the Rolling Stones.
Rolling Stones?
The music group.
Oh, yeah, okay. Whoa, I don't got no stones in these gardens.
Mick Jagger, Keith Richards.
Yeah,
you know.
I gotcha. I know who those guys are. I was a teenager once. But, you know, most of them have these things. They have boulders. They might have water. They might have flagstone paths and just a few unique plants here and there. And a few, like I said, to consider are like any dwarf conifer that is not shapely. In other words, it's contorted, it's twisty, it's bent over, and maybe it was broken at one time and grew in a different direction.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things that look old. And you have to hunt around for good ones. And I love them, so I got a lot of them at my nursery.
So they actually grow in Oregon, in other words.
Oh, yes, yes. All this stuff grows in Oregon. You know, you think I talk about stuff that don't grow in Oregon.
And in the desert.
You know, anything that's bent or crooked, any plant that has a weeping form, you know, like a weeping blue atlas cedar, you know, that's a really good one. Those are good. There are cedars, there are cypress, there are pines, all of them that have their weeping varieties. There's even a weeping giant sequoia.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
I raised a few of those. I've got one planted by one of my greenhouses at the nursery, and then I've got one at home, and they're a very interesting tree. They don't have long branches. Their branches are like a foot on either side. That's it.
Like little babies.
But they grow tall.
Oh, do they?
Oh, yeah. They can grow, I don't know what the ultimate height is. Mine is about 7-8 feet tall, and the one I planted about 30 years ago, I pruned it a little bit, but it's probably 15 feet tall, maybe somewhere in that vicinity.
So they're slow growing.
Very slow growing, and they don't push a whole lot, but you can prune them and shape them in any kind of decadent way that you prefer. But the cool thing about any of these, they're tough, and they need very little care. That's
nice.
That's what's the best part.
Yeah.
And usually you can find these at any regular type nursery, but it seems like they're always kept way in the back so nobody can see them. I don't know why. I don't. I put mine out front so people can say, "What in the world is that crazy looking twisted tree?" And then I explain to them what they could do with it. And the light bulb goes on and bong, they buy it.
There you go.
I said, you could put this at your front door with a couple of boulders and it will look really cool. Wow, I hadn't thought of that.
There you know? Go. So, and when in doubt, put an overpriced sticker on it.
Oh, yeah, put $1,000 on it, you know.
Somebody will, yeah.
Right. Oh, gosh. But Japanese gardens are created to look old and wild. I mean, they're very picturesque that way. And you can plant them in a raised planter bed out in the backyard in a corner of your yard that's been created with some boulders. And you take some, say, foot to foot and a half diameter, not round boulders, but regular boulders, and put them in some kind of a pattern and then fill the middle of it with good soil and put one of these exotic trees with a couple of twisted shrubs on either side, and that's a start, you know. And
wow.
And if you've never done it before, you get started and you stand back and look at it for a while, and yeah. You go, wow, I'm starting to get a picture here.
Yeah.
And then you can go, like I say, to other places and see some of this that's already, you know, underway. Now, at the entrance to our nursery, I've got one side of there's a main sidewalk that goes in the front doors, and one side of it has a pond with a waterfall and mm-hmm. a couple of these twisted conifers that I've pruned into yeah. exotic monsters. And then the other side is a little bit tamer, but I still pruned a few of those, but I've got some other plants that I haven't destroyed. They're still the same shape they should be.
I got to take a tour of that.
You
someday.
Want to. You ought to come on. I'll walk you around, and you'll be going, whoa, what's that?
What, yeah.
Yeah, and then in the back, behind our greenhouses, we have an event yard, if you will. Mm. And we used to do weddings and things back there, mm-hmm. but we got out of that business. And so, you know, the Chamber of Commerce will meet there for, like, their summer meeting, and there's sometimes a family group wants to take photos and things. And there's we got a fairly big pond with koi in it back there.
Oh, you still have them?
Oh, yeah. In the back of the nursery.
Oh, not the ones that...
Not at my house. They're all gone. The otters got them. But these koi in that pond are 3 feet long and,
wow.
I mean, real big and thick and monsters, you know.
They could probably fight off an otter.
Yeah, they'd eat the otter. But it has a Oriental or a Japanese motif to it in mm-hmm. that I've got some big boulders in there. I've got a waterfall that has several different levels and layers and little falls. And that way, when I bring clients in that I'm consulting with or designing their yard, I walk them around and say, well, this is this, and this is this, and you can do this, or you can have this. And, you know, then the light goes on.
Yeah.
You know, it's not yeah. just drawings on a piece of paper. They can actually see that piece of paper translated into real life.
Reality.
Yeah. Oh, now I get it. You're right.
Yeah.
And that gets them enthused, and they get going on that. But, you know, it's just with these crooked... malformed trees, if you will, and I malform them on purpose sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, they look very ancient. They have that aura of old age, and that's what a Japanese garden is all about. It's
yeah.
it's long-term, old-time mm-hmm. kind of thing. And, you know,
nice.
it's big in Japan, and it's big in... Well,
China?
I don't know about China, but Japan, for sure. But they're all over the world. I mean, you can find them in San Francisco and places like that. We got a break. Okay, I'll be back.
With more old stuff.
Old stuff, really old stuff.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Alrighty. Hey, it's cooling off there. It's 90 now.
Oh, gosh. I'm about ready to get my sweater on, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
90, only 90. Anyway, welcome back. And if you have a question, 673-4464. And I'm talking about Japanese gardens and how to create them and the types of plants that go in and, you know, a few hints about what you should do and what you should not do. So I was talking about these mangled up trees that really look good. And they don't all have to be mangled, but I like the mangled ones because they give it a lot of character.
A little uniqueness.
Yeah, nobody else has them the way I mangle them. But there are shrubs, too, that you can use, not a lot, but that you can use in a Japanese garden, like junipers, you know, that can be spotted around, not many, and not planted close together, really spaced out, you know, maybe 15, 20 feet apart, that you can prune and keep pruned and give them that exotic windswept look, or, you know, whatever turns you on as far as a plant is concerned. You can prune them accordingly, and they'll respond accordingly in that way. It's in space, like in space in the yard.
I was thinking
not
Moon
2001 or whatever that was.
Space Odyssey.
Not the Space Odyssey. Space between plants,
yeah.
Like especially in a Japanese garden, it's a very important concept to not crowd anything. That's not the thing. We don't want to create this jungle. You know, or plants that are going to grow into a jungle if you're not going to prune them or take care of them or shape them. A good idea, there are books, there's many books, but these glossy kind of magazines that you see at the box stores about gardening and this and that.
They've got racks
of them.
Yeah.
And they'll occasionally have one on Japanese gardens and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Pick one up and they've got photos in there. They've got diagrams on pruning and spacing, the type of plants that you use or can use, and that will really help you solidify what I'm talking about now. And when you see the photo, if you've never done it, and you see the photo, you go, oh yeah, I know what that dude was talking about now. That's a weird plant. Let's get it.
Let's do it.
But in a Japanese garden, there's not any straight lines. You know, things are, you know,
not
in a row, okay? It's not like a hedge or anything like that. There's, inadvertently you might create a straight line between two plants, but not on purpose, for goodness sake. because nature doesn't do straight lines.
No, that's true.
And that's what they're trying to achieve. That was the ultimate goal. How do I create a small garden to sit and contemplate in and relax in, but I don't want rows of this or rows of that or lines of that. I just want something that's natural and unique.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
it looks that way.
Right,
yeah.
And it's a creation that you did. And there are a few good ones around town. I've been to different clients' houses from time to time. And, you know, the front yard, there's a lawn and some shrubs and everything else. And this one lady said, well, what I want to know about is in the back here. So we walk through the garage into the backyard. It was a whole different world back there.
Oh, no.
I mean, they really did a good job. They
had
several water falls going. And it was too crowded for a Japanese garden like I'm speaking about, but it was pretty the way they had done it, and it was a small yard too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a concrete patio, kind of a free form, no square, no straight lines or anything like that, and they had block walls that acted as planters, and it was very, very nice. And
cool.
I forget what she was asking. I think she wanted a bid on something, or it was just a consultation about should I do this or should I do that, or, you know, what can I prune or how can I prune, you know, those kinds of things. But I was very impressed, because if you drove by the house, you'd never know that was in the backyard. Right.
Wow.
and that's kind of the thought I'm trying to portray here, to make something very unique.
And just yours.
And just yours, exactly. Your ideas, your thought, and it doesn't have to be done in a day. It can be done over 10 years, you know, a little bit and a little bit and mm-hmm. a little bit. And as you learn more and see more of plant materials and maybe some different designs, you know, it gives you more ideas, better ideas, and then you can incorporate that into your own Japanese garden. And it doesn't have to be a Japanese garden. That's just what people call it.
Call them.
I mean, yeah. it's your own unique garden. You know?
Creation.
Yeah. And a good natural way, I don't know, but to get some good ideas is you go up into the high country, up there by Diamond Lake, where there are lava flows and rocks and stuff like that, and get off on one of those side roads, Forest Service roads or something, and go up in there for a ways, and you'll see natural settings that will give you ideas because they're sparse. The trees have been subjected to snow, wind, rain,
just
fire,
about everything.
About everything, and they're contorted and they're twisty, and they got multiple trunks, and they're dwarfed because it's not a long growing season, and they're in the midst of a lava flow or a bunch of rocks or something like that. And you go, wow, I want to create that in my backyard, you know, and that's a stepping point. That's a, you know, okay.
An idea.
Yeah, there's an idea for you. And you can drive, you know, 5-10 miles on that road, and look both sides, take a walk in the woods, and you'll see more and more of this all the time. For years, I used to go up in Windigo Pass area where that's
where
on
the
fire. When that's on fire right now. And you get up there about, you know, 5,000-6,000 feet, and mountain hemlock is the predominant species up there. Yeah. And it's a slow grower anyway, and they grow pretty close together, and the soil's not what you call the best in the world. But the mountain hemlock trees are so... there's been so much snow on a lot of them. Some of them that are a foot or two high are maybe 30 years old.
You stunted their growth.
And those are the type I collect. And I collect them for my bonsai collection. And I always stop at the Glide Ranger Station and get a permit.
Permit. I was going to say, is this legal?
Always, in case you're listening, I always get a permit. You can look it up. But, you know, that will give you a whole host of ideas. And if you get a permit, you can dig. And it's easy to dig up there because some of the stuff grows in pumice soil. And pumice soil is so easy
to
dig.
It's almost like ash.
It is. It's hard, let's say hard ash.
Yeah.
You know, where it just doesn't. It's crumbly, but it doesn't fall apart like sand or ash or something like that. And you get a good ball of roots on it. It doesn't have to be huge. And it transplants very easily. And I've done that for years and years and years. I haven't been up there for a few years because of the fires and stuff.
Yeah.
But usually I try to get up in August, September, right in there.
Right about now.
Yeah, right about now when the fires are going really well. Gosh.
Adds a little color to it.
Yeah, a lot of color. Right?
Gosh.
But you're up there looking at nature, and you know, if you've never taken the Drim Drive around Crater Lake, that would be a good idea because that's even a higher elevation, and you don't even have to get out of your car. You can stop on the side of the road and look at these kinds of things.
Nice.
And again, it's an idea drive. It's a drive to get that creative portion of your brain that has to do with plants. Yeah, I'd like to create that. I'd like to have something like along those lines in my backyard because I got the perfect spot. We kind of did a job, I think I talked about it last week, out in 10 Mile here. It's been 2 weeks now. And we created not a Japanese garden, but a similar private garden in the back corner of these folks' yard.
Yeah.
And we had they bought a big waterfall thing from the co-op. Beautiful, you know. It looks like stone and rocks, but it's not. It's fiberglass.
Okay.
You know, and it's painted
like a bathtub.
It looks like a tree stump, and it has three waterfalls in it. And, you know, we set all that up for them and planted it, and we used a lot of rock in there. They wanted gravel instead of bark mulch in most of it, and we bark mulched the beds. And there's benches, and they were in the nursery, I don't know, a few days ago, and just talked about how beautiful it is and how much they enjoy it. And you know, and they sit out there now and enjoy that and just looking at it, and it's quiet. And you know, there's the next door neighbor's 300 feet away, you know, so it's quiet in that respect. And a lot of birds are coming in, and the water and the whole nine yards. It doesn't have to be big, it doesn't have to be fancy, and it doesn't have to be acres of landscape to make it.
Your own little forest.
Exactly, your own little private outdoor spot. And that's what I'm trying to convey here to the listeners. You can create this thing, in a spot. And it's always good to have a little bit of shade out there. You don't want it in full blazing sun from morning till night. That's hard to sit in August, in the blazing sun. It's good to have maybe a couple of at least one or maybe two shade trees placed in such a way that it will cast shade in there most of the day. Mm-hmm. And, it makes it more pleasant to sit. Yeah. That's the cool thing too. Now you may have a large yard, but don't try to take the whole yard on at once. I'm going to do the whole backyard that way. Start small.
My dad didn't know how to start small.
Yeah. Well, pick a small corner, maybe 10 by 10, 15 by 10, something like that, and start with that. And because too large of a project all at once can burn you out.
Oh, yes.
You betcha.
I know.
Yeah, exactly. And you can always add to your garden over time. That's the best way to do it. You get the basics done, and then you see something at a nursery or one of the box stores that has a weird plant. Hey, that would fit. So you buy one of those and add it somewhere in your...
A little at a time.
Exactly. Yeah. And that way you don't overplant. You don't overburden yourself with labor. You're not planting 100 things all at once.
Your kids' labor.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
That's another story.
Uh-huh. I'm a product of one of those.
Should we take a break now?
Okay.
Let's go. All righty. We'll be right back. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we're back, still hanging in at 90 degrees.
Oh, great. I am real pleased.
We do have lines open, do we not?
Yeah, 673-4464 if you have a question. And I'm talking about a Japanese garden setting in your backyard. Or, the front yard would be a little busy because you got traffic and people. But your backyard, private, quiet. Like a sanctuary that you can build for yourself and enjoy without a whole bunch of people
tromping over it.
Tromping on it. And get off the grass. Okay. Yeah. But one of the highlights of a Japanese garden is water. And it can be simple, small pond that you create. And those are, fairly easy. Or a waterfall that splashes with, great sound. And you can buy those from the co-op and other stores that have these fountains, and the whole nine yards, you just pick it up, and they're fairly expensive, but when you set them in the right place in your backyard and amidst your garden, they really make a statement. They're really nice. Or you can try to build your own pond and make your own waterfall like I did at my house, because I didn't want to spend whatever the co-op, and I wanted real rocks.
Yeah. Not that fake stuff.
Not that fake stuff that fades after 10 years, but I wanted a real rock that lasts a couple thousand years.
Yeah.
But water really makes a real statement in amongst that kind of thing. And like I say, build them, buy them, depends on how talented you are or how much effort and energy you want to put into that project.
Right.
But just imagine, like, at the end of a hot day, like, today, sitting in your garden with water splashing, and then it's going to put you in a good mood right away, and you won't yell at the kids or anything like that. In fact, you'll say, come on out here. I want to show you how this water works, and then throw them in. No. That's a joke, okay?
Yeah. And I'm just joking.
Yeah. And you're going to cool off. You're going to be in a good mood. You're going to cool off. And all that is just good for our soul, okay? It's something that I do every night. I sit outside for a while, watch the sun go down behind the mountain, and feel the breeze come up, and look at the water, and I used to look at the fish until the otter got them.
Oh, are you going to replace those, or?
Not for a while. I'm going to make sure all the otters moved on somewhere. I don't know.
How are you going to get rid of the otters?
I don't know. I have no clue. I've never seen them before. In 30 years, I never saw an otter, and all of a sudden, boom, there's two of them in my pond.
Could you put a trap out there?
I could, but then I'm on the radio, and you're talking about this, and the Forest Service guy's saying, let's go get winners.
Sometimes I forget where I'm at.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. But at my place, I've got kind of a modified Japanese garden in my backyard, and my crew and I built it, oh, gosh, over time, about 15, 20 years ago, I think. It's just a peaceful place to sit. It has three waterfalls, the waterfalls were I bought from a guy, the real rock, okay, and they're like a pillar, and he hollowed out the inside, and the center of the rock, they're about 3 feet tall and about 12 inches in diameter, heavier than whatnot.
I guess so, yeah.
And it takes two people to move them. Jeez. And he drilled about an inch and a half diameter hole, and then at the bottom, I plugged in my water line, and the pump I have in my pond pumps the water up, and then it comes splashing down into a little pool. Then it goes down a couple of smaller waterfalls uh-huh. into the bigger pool, and then recirculates. And it's
nice.
About the pond's about 5 feet deep, 5.5 feet deep. You know, maybe 15
you
feet.
You can actually go wading in that if you wanted.
Well,
to.
Yeah, if you were 7 feet tall, you could wade, right? and it's about 15 feet long and about 10 feet wide, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So I thought the fish would be safe.
Well,
you know?
Yeah.
I thought, well, who's going to hurt those fish? I mean, it's too deep. It's too far down there. But them buggers, those little water rats. They said, watch this, boy, we'll get him.
I just can't imagine where they would come from.
I don't either, because the creek, McNabb Creek, where I live, is there's pools of water, but it's not running over the surface. And that's, you know, done that forever because it's just...
Yeah, that's just the way it
is. It's a part-time creek.
Yeah.
And
right.
when it's full, it runs down into Looking Glass Creek. I think it's Olalla Creek, and then Olalla runs into Looking Glass. So that's how that goes.
But it's strange.
Yeah, it is. Unless they ate all the fish in Olalla Creek and said we're looking for more. I don't know, because my neighbors below me, they all have ponds too. Mm-hmm. Not big, but and there's two on the. I'm a mile back on a dirt road, so there's two big ponds on the way out. And there's ducks in there, and wild ducks. And somebody told me there was fish in there at one time, but maybe the otters got them
too.
But they're in the middle of a ranch, and there's they'd have to come. Gosh, they'd have to walk through half a mile of pasture to get there uphill.
You wouldn't think they'd want.
No, I'm going to start reading up on otters and find out what their what their habits are.
A bullet between the eyes.
Well, no. There's otter lovers out there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway, I was describing my waterfalls and the small pool, and you know it's. Like I said, it had fish until last week. But anyway, it makes a lot of pleasant noise. When we open the back door, the back screen door, the pond's probably 15 feet from the back door. We can hear it while we're eating dinner. You know, we can hear all the waterfalls and the splashes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it is. And it actually, with that water, and it's in a shady area from about, say, 5 o'clock on, 4:30 on because of the trees, and so it's cooler back there. So that's part of our air conditioning system. Yeah, and the breeze starts blowing about then. So we do turn on the air conditioner during the day, but in the evening we shut it off and just open all the windows and the breeze.
Natural.
Yeah, it's natural breeze comes up every night.
Nice.
And so for plants, I have some. you know, I do have some Japanese maples surrounding it, but I keep them pruned. And then I have my bonsai collection sitting on the wall. I got about 20 bonsai and pots sitting there outlining that. And they kind of surround it. And then I have different colored rocks, rocks that I found up the North Umpqua, rocks that I found over in the Nevada desert down by Pyramid Lake.
So it's not fake rock?
Oh, no, none of it's fake rock. It took quite a – I had one guy working for me at the time. Smaller guy, about, you know, say 5'8" or something. Well, we collected all the round rocks from different creeks around here and the river. And they're, you know, 8 inches in diameter, 10 inches in diameter. And he got down in the pool. When there was no water in it, but he got down in the hole.
Oh.
And we had the black plastic liner in there. And then he was the lightest, so we wanted him in there. And he was the one that stacked all the rocks all the way up the sides.
Okay.
And we had a little angle on the sides so the rocks could just fit right on top of one another. And it's lasted many, many years. None of them have
gone anywhere.
No, they're all glued together.
Still at attention.
Still there, standing there. And so it's really a nice addition. It's something that you know, even on a 95 degree day, it's not 95 back there, it's 95 in your parking lot, and usually it's about 6 to 7 degrees cooler at my house.
Yeah.
Than it is
You're
here.
Lucky. Yeah.
Well, it's the way the canyon runs, you know, see, because I got two tall mountains on either side of me. Right now it gets shady. The sun goes behind the western ridge at about 5:30, somewhere in there. And it's down below the ridge because the ridge is probably 600-700 feet above me. And so the shade starts early. And then as soon as the shade gets down into the valley, the breeze begins to come up the creek.
Nice.
Yeah, it's amazing. I you know, until it got real hot during the summer, I never noticed that. Well, one day I said, you know, that breeze comes as soon as it gets shady. I wonder what's going on.
Boy, it must be heck during the winter, though. Doesn't it get colder?
Yeah, it's colder.
Yeah.
Definitely colder. Yeah. When Snowmageddon came along, let's see, it was probably, gosh, zero at our house, I'm sure. Ooh. Something like that. But I got a rip-roaring fire in the fireplace. You know?
There you go.
It's, you know.
It's like camping outdoors.
That's right. I just keep the doors closed. So anyway, let me give you a few examples of some of the plants. We got time? Yeah, we got time.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the plants that I like for Japanese gardens. Or if you don't want to call it a Japanese garden, call it your personal hideaway garden or something like
China.
That. China. Yeah, China garden. It's okay. Now, first, the toughest trees that will fill the bill, you know, and the bill is, you know, what is the color, what is the shape, what is the rate of growth? Those are all important criteria in your selection process. You don't want to get a giant sequoia or a redwood in there because that's going to be way, 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 way too big, way, way, way too fast. It's going to wreck your pond and
before you know it,
and fall on your house probably.
Oh,
but the rate of growth is critical. You know, you want to use slow-growing conifers, dwarf conifers, that are only going to grow. You know, like this mountain hemlock only grows, gosh, 3-4 inches a year. That's it.
That's perfect.
You know, that's part of its genetic makeup because that's what it grew like up in the 5,000-foot elevation.
Yeah, and, for centuries.
Yeah, yeah. And the ones I have are, gosh, the one is, I think, 120 years old or something like that.
Wow.
And it's a small tree. It's four feet tall, maybe?
Good.
Three and a half feet tall. And,
yeah.
And the trunk's about, 3 inches in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Oh yeah, it is totally amazing. But their growing season up in that country is very, very short.
That explains it.
Yeah, we got a call or something?
No, we got a break.
Oh, a break? We have a break?
We'd like to have a call, wouldn't you?
Well, that would be nice.
What's the phone number?
673-4464.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Story. Oh, yes. No, we won't share that on the air.
No, we won't. But, you know, as I was saying in the last segment, you know, color and shape and rate of growth and all that's important in the selection process. So rate of growth is critical. Use slow-growing conifers, and that's why I talk about the dwarf types, or even going up into the higher elevations and getting a permit and digging, you know, mountain hemlock or pine species that you might find up there. And because fast-growing plants would be a maintenance headache. It would be a real pain in the neck. You'd be out there pruning several times a year just to achieve what you want to achieve, and keeping it small and not I'm not talking knee high, but you know, you don't want it 9 feet tall and taking over your area.
That's all kinds of weather, I'm assuming.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't want to be pruning every month, shaping every month, you know. And color of the plant is important for an overall look. There are conifers with green needles. There are some that have gold needles. There are some that have blue foliage. It's mixed together for accent plants and points. Gives you a very interesting look in your garden if you have different colors. Not everything is green, you see. Oh. You know, you've got a golden juniper, maybe. Or maybe you have a blue globosa spruce or a weeping blue atlas cedar, and maybe another type of conifer, but you've got all this different color as your main plants. We got a call?
We got a call. I think we can get it in. Hi, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hi.
Hey, Mike, this is Barry Robinson.
Barry, how you doing, buddy?
Good. I have a quick question for you. So we had a cherry tree that was on our property when we bought our house, and I think planted itself from a seed.
Okay.
And it was on the property line in the city sidewalk. So last year I had to have it cut down because it was getting into my neighbor's RV and the sidewalk. But now, when the tree's gone, something I've never had before, I have probably about 30 or 40 little cherry trees popping up through my junipers and my roses. And I mean, they're just everywhere.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that when I actually had the tree. So I was curious, one, why, and two, how do I get rid of it? I've had them pulled out once before, but they just came back again. So,
Well, you know, what I think is when, now this was a fruiting cherry, obviously, and
yes.
and probably the birds, you know, picked them off. They like to pick off the cherries, and then they take them to their secret place, and they eat them, and they leave the seeds. So maybe they were in your brush, in your junipers or whatever, and they left the seeds, and over time they just germinated and became little cherry trees. And the only thing,
because we
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, but we didn't have that problem with when the. For the 4 years that we lived at the house, we didn't have the problem before we cut the tree down. Now we cut the tree down, we have all these little cherry trees.
Now, is the tree was the tree near the area where you're getting all the little cherry trees?
Like, oh yeah.
How near? 10 feet away?
Well, some of these little cherry trees are almost right up to where it was, but they're
okay. That they're coming off the roots.
5 feet away, maybe.
They're coming off the roots.
Okay.
I'll bet you. And is the stump still visible, or did you have the stump ground?
No, the stump's still there.
Okay, if you grind the stump, you'll have to get. You can rent a stump grinder or call somebody that does that, and grind the stump and get down there into that root system and destroy the root system. And I think the little cherry trees will quit coming.
Oh, very good.
Okay.
Well, thank you, sir. You have a good night.
Well, thanks for the call, Barry. It's nice to hear from you.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Thank you. All righty.
How much time we got there, boss?
We have. Couple of minutes.
A couple of minutes. Well, I got three more pages of Japanese garden notes.
Go for it.
Okay, Harry, what'd you do? You didn't go to
No, speak English, not Japanese.
Okay. But I was talking about conifers that you can get, and the different colors. With the they have some have green, you know, dark green foliage. Some have golden tips. Some have blue, like spruce, blue spruce, and mixed together, you know, for accent points, they give you a very interesting look to your garden. And if it's all green year round, it's okay, but you should have some contrast. Contrast is good. It shows off the best sides of all plants. If you got 10 of the same thing, they're all pretty and they're doing their job, but
it's,
you know,
dull.
Yeah, dull. I was going to say, where's the pizzazz? That's an old term.
Pizzazz?
Yeah, from the 50s or 40s or 20s. I don't know. But same thing. What you said and what I said is the same. But if you have different colors, different shapes, different growth rates, some that are low, some that are, you know, 4 feet tall, some that might even get up to 5-6 feet tall, but, you know, something that you can manage and something that you can handle, that's what's going to give you the uniqueness of your Japanese garden. And if you plant them near big boulders that you've incorporated into this, where they weep over the boulder or something along those lines, it's even trickier. It's even better. What you're trying to do is create an ancient forest with young plants. And if you work at it long enough, that occurs. And if, like I say, if you get a book with some color photos in it, there's a lot of tricks. It's hard to explain how to do the tricks, but if you saw me do it, or if you came to the nursery and saw what we have done with different plants, you'd get the idea very quickly.
And speaking of the nursery, when are you there, the hours?
When am I there? Never. I'm in the radio station. We're open 9 to 5. We're on Highway 99 south of Winston, about a half a mile on the left. And the number is 679-8224.
All right. Catch you next week.
Okay. I'll be here.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.